different reason. That's all.
May it please the court. This case is about the statutory interpretation of 38 U.S.C. 7266A, which sets forth a 120-day period in which a notice of appeal must be filed to the Veterans Court. In denying...
Is it about statutory interpretation? I thought it was about the Veterans Court's misinterpretation of the equitable doctrine of equitable tolling.
Right, and my understanding of this court's cases is that that flows from an interpretation of 7266A.
I'm a little confused by exactly what your argument here is. Is it that the Veterans Court erred in deciding that equitable tolling didn't apply to the particular facts of this case, or that the Veterans Court has erred as a matter of law by foreclosing the entire category of facts of the type present here from equitable tolling?
The latter, Your Honor. It's our contention that there was no fact-finding or application of law to fact. I think that...
Let me ask you the converse question then is, assuming, it seems to me that that's the better argument for you, that they've made a legal error by foreclosing the entire category. Do you think that in every instance where somebody puts a piece of mail in a mailbox, that that is sufficient to warrant equitable tolling categorically, or is it still going to be a case-by-case determination?
It would still be a case-by-case determination. What the standard that we are proposing here is similar to standards that happen in other cases where there was a sort of a mechanical problem, and it's very circumscribed.
Well, what interests me is it appears in this instance, based on sort of speculation and allegations of your client, that there's more than an allegation of a mechanical problem. It may be there's an allegation of a criminal problem.
It's possible. Interference
with the United States mails. And I'm not sure which road that takes us down, although it certainly takes us down your initial argument road of a legal error.
Yeah, it's true, Your Honor. We don't know whether the wind blew the flag down or someone specifically.
Well, as I recall, he said something about his neighbor told him, hearsay, that children were playing with the mailboxes and may have lowered the flag. But if the problem I have with that is, if it's true, it's a crime.
Right, and I don't want to overstate, Your Honor. It's true that was said, but the fact is we don't know.
Right.
We don't know, but what we do know is even the Veterans Court recognizes that it was a circumstance beyond Mr. James' control. Their specific rule that they impose here is we hold that an errantly fallen mailbox flag is not an extraordinary circumstance. That's a categorical exclusion, and even they recognize using the word errant.
Yeah. That's where I have the problem, because it may not be errantly fallen.
That's correct. But I think what that reflects is that articulation by the Veterans Court is not a factual articulation. It's a categorical articulation. Mm-hmm.
Well, it doesn't seem like they've made a particular determination that in this case, on these facts, equitable tolling is not warranted. They made a categorical determination that a fallen mailbox flag is not entitled to equitable tolling. And it seems like that's inconsistent with our prior precedent, which is to say, you know, lightly, encourage them to not treat these as categorical claims, to treat each particular instance on a fact-by-fact determination.
That's exactly right, Your Honor. We can look at this court's prior cases as confirmation. For example, the Barrett case, the Veterans Court had before them a veteran who claimed that due to mental incapacity, he wasn't able to file his NOA on time. But rather than looking at the facts of his case, they categorically held mental incapacity is not an extraordinary circumstance. And that's the same thing they did here. This rule would apply to a veteran who put his NOA in his mailbox and had no idea whether it would be postmarked stamped that day. Or it would apply to a veteran who put his NOA in his mailbox at 11:59 p.m. and knew absolutely that it would not be postmarked stamped that day. And it also dictates the outcome in this case, under circumstances in which the veteran had, quote unquote, no doubt that it would be postmark stamped that same day. So, yes, it's a categorical exclusion. It's also similar to the court's cases involving misfiling, which we tend to lump those cases in with this case because they don't involve mental incapacity or homelessness, other sorts of conditions. But the government in that case, in those cases, argued, well, he sent it to the wrong place. There was more he could have done. This court found that the facts were
disputed. Sure, those cases seem, I mean, I understand where you're analogizing them, but to me, those cases don't seem all that helpful because they're mostly misfiling with different parts of the VA. And so the VA is getting official receipt of that. Whereas this, I don't think we can, beyond the specific outlines of the postmark rule in parts, I think, C and D or whatever of the statute, we can attribute filing with the Postal Service as filing with the VA just because it's a branch of the government. Congress has specified when the actual postmark rule would apply. So it seems to me those cases may be somewhat analogous, but I wouldn't want to overread them.
Yeah, I agree that they're not identical, and that is a distinction. I think what's similar to those is in each case the veteran believed that he or she had filed his NOA on time and took steps to preserve his rights, the touchstone that the Supreme Court set forth in Irwin. So I won't belabor those points. And the final thing I would say is that it's clear in this case that this court may determine the issue as a matter of law because the facts are undisputed and the correct interpretation of 7266A in fact does dictate the outcome in this case.
I don't quite understand it. That makes sense in those misfiling cases where we're basically deciding that if you file at the RO or file somewhere else in the VA, it's constructive receipt. That, as a matter of law, seems to be correct. But in a case like this where it's based upon particular facts, and I think you yourself said not every instance of a fallen flag, mailbox flag, is going to lead to equitable tolling, isn't the proper result to remand to the Veterans Court to make these kind of application of law to facts in the first instance?
Yeah, absolutely, Your Honor. And I don't mean to say that the misfiling cases are identical. And there is that distinction that Your Honor put forward. What is similar about them is that initially the Veterans Court made a categorical determination. They said, if you misfile, you're not entitled to equitable tolling. Whereas here, they made also a similar categorical pronouncement. And what's similar between this case and the misfiling cases is the veteran thought that he had done everything he needed to do. It's unlike cases such as the cases the government cites where the veteran actually knew that the NOA wasn't going to be filed on time. So that's the distinction. And so when we formulated...
Isn't that something that still... that because they didn't make that conclusion, which is either a factual conclusion or an application of the general principles to the facts of this case, still something that should be left for the Veterans Court to decide in the first instance. I mean, your view is they haven't made the inquiry they should have. They've made an incorrect legal determination. So shouldn't it be remanded then to them to do what really is their job, to apply the law to the facts?
I think in this case, because the facts are undisputed, it's not as if there's some...
Well, I get it, but it still doesn't matter whether the facts are disputed or not. Our jurisdiction isn't just on factual finding, it's application of law to facts.
I agree.
An application of law to undisputed facts to reach a discretionary decision is still not within our jurisdiction.
Understood, Your Honor. And if you look at the standard that we...
I mean, I'm with you. If this goes back to the Veterans Court should find equitable tolling here. It's pretty clear to me that they're applying an incorrect legal standard and being overly stingy. But I think we usurp their authority and we go beyond our statutory jurisdiction if we make that finding for them in the first instance.
I think we're on the same page, Your Honor. And I don't want to belabor it, but I think there is a distinction in situations where a narrowly tailored interpretation of 7266 dictates the outcome of the equitable tolling claim. And in a sense, this case is similar to the misfiling cases in that way, because you can say in instances...
I don't understand what narrowly tailored circumstance you would have us draw here, though. Would it be that every time somebody puts something in a mailbox and puts the flag up that would get it to the post office in time, that warrants equitable tolling even if it doesn't?
Something like that, Your Honor, yes.
Well, see, that's where I have a little bit of a problem in making that a categorical rule, because Congress has spoken to delivery of things through the Postal Service, and they've spoken to when those kind of operations will deem something timely filed if not. And if we're using our equitable powers to expand that category categorically, then it seems to me that we're broadening that postmark rule in a way that's inconsistent with Congress's intent categorically. Now, equitable tolling is a specific case remedy, and the Veterans Court can determine that on a case-by-case basis. But if we're doing that as a matter of law for every case where you file it or where you put it in the post box, then that seems to me like we're rewriting the statute.
I understand, Your Honor, and there's an issue of the waiver of sovereign immunity that this court does not want to broaden, and I understand all that. There is something that is distinct about this case, though. He didn't just put it in his mailbox. What the facts that this court, that the Veterans Court didn't consider, and I'm not saying they should have or that it would have changed the outcome, is that there was a pattern in practice, and he knew, based on years of experience, that putting it in at that time would result in a post-op.
That's uncontradicted.
But that's exactly what...
He had an expectation under the circumstances that it would be retrieved and postmarked.
Correct.
It's exactly why it counsels in favor of equitable tolling based upon the particular facts of this case, but not us proclaiming as a rule in every case where you put something in the mailbox and put the flag up that it should be deemed timely filed.
I think we understand each other, Your Honor. And
what you're hearing is that if it comes back up to us,
I understand.
There's probably going to be another result. Yeah.
Thank you, and we respectfully submit that the decision should be reversed.
When the court ordered the veteran to show cause as to why this was timely, did the secretary file a response?
I believe that the secretary did file a response.
And did they argue it shouldn't be subject to equitable tolling?
Your Honor, if I may confer with counsel here, I believe that the secretary filed a response, but I cannot remember off the top of my head. If I could confer with counsel.
No, just go on. You should know the record a little bit better
than
that.
Your Honor.
It baffles me why the Veterans Court and the secretary continues to insist on being overly rigid in equitable tolling in these cases. I mean, the Supreme Court has reversed the notion that this is jurisdictional. We reversed on a number of occasions when the Veterans Court rules out entire classes of cases categorically and said, look at them case by case. And yet here they have again ruled out a category of circumstances categorically.
Your Honor, I would respectfully disagree that in this case the Veterans Court categorically ruled out this entire category of cases. Rather, we submit that the Veterans Court looked at Mr. James's case on a case-by-case basis and even cited the Sneed case stating that it should look at the circumstances on a case-by-case basis.
It may have cited that, but it also had a big long thing of here are the categories of cases that might be equitable tolling. He tries to fit in one case. We don't find it there. And then it says rather broadly that the court finds a fallen mailbox flag is not an extraordinary circumstance, but rather an ordinary hazard of last-minute mailing. It doesn't seem to me that they've looked at the particular equities of this case.
So if the mailbox flag was lowered by a third party, would that be extraordinary?
Your Honor, the Veterans Court admittedly did not discuss specifically the reasons for the mailbox flag being lowered. However,
no, they just said errantly lowered.
I don't believe it said errantly. What I saw is that the court found that a fallen mailbox flag. I don't see the word errant.
Here, Mr. James contends that the 120-day appeal window should be equitably tolled because an errantly lowered flag on his residential mailbox right?
Yes, Your Honor. It does say that in that section of it.
Yes, it does.
I was pointing to the other section where they said simply that a fallen mailbox flag is not an extraordinary circumstance.
Well, that's even worse for you because it seems like that conclusion is we're never going to consider a fallen mailbox flag as sufficient for equitable tolling.
Well, Your Honor, the Veterans Court did say that a fallen mailbox flag...
Let me just ask you a hypothetical. If that's what... and it's not much of a hypothetical for me. That's the way I read it. If this decision stands for the notion that a fallen mailbox flag never can warrant equitable tolling, that's legal error, isn't it?
Your Honor, again, we don't necessarily agree that this...
Yeah, but answer my question. If that's the correct interpretation of this, that a fallen mailbox flag can never constitute legal grounds for equitable tolling, isn't that inconsistent with our case law that they can't rule out categorically entire classes of circumstances, that they have to do it on a case-by-case basis?
Yes, Your Honor. The case law is that they need to assess on a case-by-case basis.
So if we read them as not doing a case-by-case analysis here, a specific analysis of the facts here, but have rather made that legal error, then there needs to be a remand, a vacate and remand for this, them to address this specifically on the facts.
Your Honor, if this court determines that the Veterans Court did not assess Mr. James's case on a case-by-case basis, which again we do disagree with, but if the court does make that determination, then the proper step would be to remand for the Veterans Court to make that determination on a case-by-case basis rather than holding as a matter of law and as appellant requests that a fallen mailbox flag in this sort of circumstance is, as a matter of law, an extraordinary circumstance.
So let's go back to my initial question where I asked you about errantly lowered flags. Supposing that the flag was lowered by a third person, wouldn't that constitute a crime?
Your Honor, I believe that if the flag was deliberately lowered without having complete knowledge of the Postal Service laws, according to my knowledge, I believe if somebody had deliberately lowered the mailbox flag, that would be mail tampering and therefore would likely be a crime.
Okay. Well, isn't that extraordinary?
Your Honor, I can't say standing here speculate as to whether that circumstance would be extraordinary or not, but the Veterans Court did state that...
Well, any crime against a veteran interfering with their ability to make a claim, you would think that would be an extraordinary circumstance.
Yes, Your Honor. However, the Veterans Court did state that a fallen mailbox flag would be considered an ordinary hazard of last-minute mailing, and the fact is here...
Right, that's exactly...
That's your problem, is they have categorically determined that a fallen mailbox flag falls into the category of ordinary excusable neglect, not treating this on an individual case basis, but as a category. And we've told them over and over again that they can't do that.
Your Honor, we do think that the Veterans Court here did assess Mr. James's scenario on a case-by-case basis. In the paragraph previous to the one that has been off-quoted, the Veterans Court did find that in the case at hand, Mr. James did not misfile his case, unlike Santana Venegas and Jacquet and those
types
of cases.
But that's just another example of them saying he doesn't fall into this other category where this court has determined, apparently categorically, it is always equitable tolling.
Yes, Your Honor, but he also then states that he placed his NOA in a personal mailbox on the last day of the appeal period and left town for the weekend.
Can I ask you another question? And my guess is you're not going to know the answer to this, and don't feel bad about it. But I wonder how many of these cases come up where there's a late-filed appeal by a matter of days or a week or two where the court orders the veteran to show cause why they're timely. And well, my question is, does the secretary ever agree that equitable tolling should apply? Or does it, absent it falling within one of these specific cases from the Federal Circuit, does it ever agree on a case-by-case basis that, yeah, we don't see any reason why this case shouldn't go forward based on the facts of this specific case?
Your Honor, I'm not aware of whether the secretary does or does not react in certain ways to types of equitable tolling show cause orders from this court. I am not able to.
Well, not from this court, from the Veterans Court.
Apologies, from the Veterans Court.
I mean, we get a limited view because, of course, if the veteran gets equitable tolling and prevails or even doesn't prevail on the merits and those cases come up, we don't see that issue.
Yes, Your Honor.
So the cases we see are where the Secretary opposes, but I've never seen a case where a notice of appeal was untimely, but it was equitably told, and the case came up here on the merits, and there was any kind of evidence that the Secretary ever agrees to equitable tolling.
Yes, Your Honor. Unfortunately, I'm not able to say off the top of my head. If you like, I could confer with counsel to see if she has more insight, but I don't know off the top of my head. The court's earlier question, I would submit that even if this court finds that it does have jurisdiction to address Mr. James's case, that it does not have jurisdiction to ultimately decide whether Mr. James's fallen mailbox flag constitutes an extraordinary circumstance as a matter of law. And therefore, if the court determines that a remand to the Veterans Court is necessary, it should do so only for the purposes of having the Veterans Court conduct a more extensive case-by-case analysis of the facts of this case and how the legal standard of extraordinary circumstance applies to the facts of that case. We do submit that the Veterans Court is the entity that is charged with reviewing the facts and drawing inferences from those facts. And
sure, but the reason I ask you about the Secretary's practice is this is no longer jurisdictional. So it is, and it's subject to, it's no longer mandatory and jurisdictional in the sense that it can't be equitable told after Anderson. And so it seems to me that if the Secretary agreed that equitable tolling should apply, even though it's still ultimately the Veterans Court's decision, that the court might be weighed by that non-opposition from the Secretary. And it might behoove the Secretary in these kinds of cases where there's very little delay and seemingly no harm to the Secretary for them to agree that equitable tolling should be applied. Because if we keep getting cases like this, you're going to get really bad law on these points.
Keeping in mind that, at least in theory, the VA should act in favor of the veterans.
Yes, Your Honor, and I'm sure that whatever the court determines to issue as an order, the Secretary will take that into account if it does decide to remand the case. And we do realize that these laws are supposed to be construed in favor of the veterans, but nonetheless, they are in place, and the Veterans Court is the entity that is tasked with determining whether equitable tolling should be extended in a circumstance, and it did determine here that...
Did you oppose it below with the Veterans Administration, DVA, oppose equitable tolling below?
Did they deviate below? I could look at the joint appendix very quickly. And I apologize. I don't recall. Your Honor, I believe in the joint appendix at page 8, it would state whether the VA opposed it below, and it stated that I do not believe that the VA filed anything. It did file something, I believe, on June 9th, 2017, responding to appellant's response to the court's show cause order, and I do believe that it opposed the appellant's, or it stated that equitable tolling should not be extended in that circumstance.
There you go.
However, I cannot speak for whether the VA has in other cases opposed or not opposed in certain circumstances where equitable tolling was at hand. Again, we simply submit that this case is unlike other misfiling cases that appellant relies heavily upon. In fact, this court stated, I think in Santana Venegas, quoting to a different case, that this court is generally more lenient in misfiling cases than in cases where the appellant actually filed his notice late, which is what happened in this case. As such, we do not think that the misfiling cases are applicable to the current case at hand. And again, submit that should the court determined that it should remand to the Veterans Court for a further case-by-case analysis, that it should do so only in terms of ordering the Veterans Court to conduct a more specific analysis and not to rule as a matter of law that extraordinary circumstances exist in a case such as Mr. James's.
I would hope that the government would take into account when they're evaluating these orders to show cause and applying equitable tolling, that they take into account the fact that in this pro-vet system, consider what the harm is to the government in applying this standard leniently.
Yes, Your Honor.
You know, you're talking about the difference between filing on a Friday and filing on a Monday. The harm to the government is virtually non-existent. And it seems to me that should be taken into account. I just don't see any reason why the government should not consider as a significant factor the extent to which there might be any harm whatsoever to the government in applying equitable tolling in the facts of these various cases.
Yes, Your Honor, and I understand. However, again, it is the Veterans Court that is ultimately charged with determining.
Yes, but my guess is if the Secretary routinely files responses to these orders saying, we agree that equitable tolling should be applied here, that the Veterans Court might consider that non-opposition as yet another factor for why tolling should be applied.
Absolutely.
Yes, Your Honor. If the court has no further questions, thank you for your time.
Oh, we just comments.
I have nothing further, Your Honors, unless you have additional questions. Thank you.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Matter stands adjourned. All right.